Christ is risen.
Indeed.
Easter has arrived, and with it, it brings a promise and a challenge. For many people in our world today, the promise is perhaps all those yummy Easter eggs that are sitting at home, feeling especially delicious on a morning like today. The challenge can be something rather different. The challenge, I think, is often something like this. Do I go for the traditional hot cross buns or the double choc ones? For many Christians, the promise of Easter is clear. The resurrection changes everything. Death and sin, violence and corruption, their reign and their rule is no more. That's the promise of Easter. But it comes with a challenge. We might see the challenge like this. What lies at the center of our lives? Or to put it another way, around what do our lives orbit? Does the resurrection reshape our lives, giving it shape and order? Or are other forces pulling our lives in different directions? I want to explore this theme of the challenge and the promise of Easter in three parts, to begin by looking at the experience of Peter as he encountered the empty tomb for the first time. Then I want to have a look at what Paul has to say as he sketches for us a picture of the future. And finally, to wrap up by looking at the promises that we hear in the prophet Isaiah, particularly to see it in the space of what happens when Easter becomes the center of our lives. So let's begin with Peter. We might begin that Luke's account of the resurrection is all about Jesus. But it's interesting to see how Luke draws our attention to Peter's experience. If the gospel was simply made up, you'd expect far fewer loose ends than what we see here, and that all the heroes would be, well, a little more heroic and perhaps a little less warts and all. We get to see, or to put it as a question, who gets to see and hear about Jesus first? It's not Peter. He's sitting at home, presumably feeling miserable and sorry for himself. I mean, he was big and brave when everything was going well, but when Jesus was arrested, well, let's just say he kept a really low profile, brushing off any kind of association with Jesus, not once, not twice, but three times. Peter leaves it to others to take care of Jesus' remains. And so we see a group of women going out to do what these men didn't want to do. But what happens next is not a vague experience. It's a report of something so extraordinary that Luke tells us the names of the people who witnessed it. Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and a bunch more. They return. Can you imagine how quickly they would have returned to that house? They would have been gasping for air and babbling about how they saw some men in dazzling clothes and how the stone was rolled away and how Jesus' body was gone. Don't you remember? They said to the others there, Jesus told us this would happen. God's son would be handed over and crucified, and on the third day he would rise from the dead. He has risen. What's left unsaid here is the challenge of Easter. Because if Jesus was still in the tomb, there'd be nothing to worry about. But if Jesus was gone, then nothing would ever be the same. If he had risen, then this Jesus was no ordinary person, but someone with a unique connection with God, someone who shows us not only God's character, but what lies on God's heart. This is what it means to be God's son. I think Peter heard the challenge of Easter that morning. You can see it in just how the other disciples respond, can't you? To them, these words of these enthusiastic women, it just sounds like an idle tale. They thought the women were making it up. Some translations kind of do a bit of mansplaining at this point. They kind of make it look a little kinder. One version says, their words didn't make any sense to them. I can't help but wonder if what lay at the center of the disciples' life was their old regrets, their self-pity, and their fear. Yet Peter heard the Easter challenge and he got up and he went to look for himself. Whatever you do, don't miss this small little detail. The thing about Easter is that people will tell you all kinds of amazing but also disheartening things. The only question is, do you yourself get up and go and look? Well, Peter did. He got up and he ran to the tomb and he looked inside, and what he saw were the grave clothes left behind. What happens next is pretty well both unremarkable and unexpected, because Peter goes home. He's amazed at what had happened. It's interesting, Luke doesn't say that Peter went home filled with faith, utterly convinced at seeing the empty tomb or the absence of a body. No, he was puzzled. He was wondering what had happened. Can you feel the center of gravity in Peter's life beginning to shift? What holds center stage now is not his own self-pity or his designs for greatness. Rather, the puzzlement at the empty tomb is opening Peter's life up to something more, something new, something unexpected, something promised. He's open to seeing the risen Jesus and about discovering God's purposes for the world. Paul is an interesting fellow. He's another person who heard the promise and the challenge of Easter. For the longest time, pride in his heritage and his authority as a Jewish leader, that occupied center stage in his life. But if Peter had encountered an empty tomb, Paul had seen the risen Jesus in a most unexpected way. While he was en route to arrest and kill a bunch of Christians, the resurrection became not only the center of Paul's life, but in his view, it becomes the center of all of human history. This week we saw the cathedral in Paris, Notre Dame, burn. It's the center of Paris. It's the place where all the distances in Paris are measured from. It's the heart of the city. For Paul, the resurrection is like this. The resurrection is not a landmark to be admired at a distance, nor is it just a photo opportunity up close. No, it's the hub around which everything in life revolves. Why? Because it is the center of God's recreation. For Paul, the resurrection was not simply that Jesus left the tomb. No, it's broader than that. The resurrection is the beginning of God's remaking of creation. As he saw it, Christ is the first fruits, the bud, much like a daffodil, showing the arrival of spring and the end of winter. That's the promise of the resurrection. The winter of death and sin and violence and oppression is beginning to end, and a new life can dawn. God's love has begun. It's begun the renewal of creation, and everything that fosters and perpetuates destruction, well, their days are numbered. And finally, even death itself will be toppled. We get to hear more of this promise, more of this promise of Easter, if we listen to Isaiah. Because the promise and the challenge isn't confined to the distant past. No, the promise and the challenge confronts us all. Are we orbiting God's plan? Or have we cashed in our chips with those whose power is diminishing? To see this plan, the prophet Isaiah brings it into clear focus for us, where we get a sense of what the world looks like, refreshed and renewed and recreated. Lots of Christians think that God somehow is only interested in destroying people, that God comes in judgment. But I think Isaiah's picture is something different. It's a picture of promise. It's a picture of well-being. It's a picture of dignity, security, prosperity, and reconciliation. Isaiah's vision is centered on Jerusalem, but only because that's where it begins for all of humanity. Just listen to it. People should not die in childhood. Old people should live in dignity. And if you don't make it to 100, you've been ripped off, my friends. That's God's vision. That's God's promise. This expresses God's desire to end the poverty and the indifference that causes so many lives to end prematurely. The prophet goes on further, doesn't he? People should be able to build homes and live in them. They should be able to plant vineyards and enjoy the harvest. God believes that security is important and that people shouldn't be worried about invasion or dispossession or being exploited. Reconciliation is so important to God's vision. The wolf and the lamb, the predator and the prey get to feed together, not one upon the other. Isaiah's vision is a picture not only of humanity flourishing, but all of creation enjoying the promise and the challenge of Easter. For by raising Jesus from the dead, God puts his plan into action, a plan where love rather than hate, where courage rather than fear takes root. The resurrection is God's guarantee to see this work through until the very end. I know that many of us can arrive at Easter with a faith that feels as flimsy as a candle that flickers in the breeze. We can feel unsure and embarrassed and feel anything but faith-filled or confident in our lives. But the promise and the challenge of Easter is that Jesus rose bodily from the grave. And it challenges our heart to think carefully around what our lives orbit. Is it our own ambition? Is it our own self-pity? Or is it our own certainty or our own prowess, our own strength? Sadly, such lives rarely have room for the resurrection. But if we are open to new possibilities, if we desire to orbit around something greater than ourselves, then we will become open enough, just like Peter, to explore that empty tomb for ourselves. The resurrection means that we shouldn't be satisfied with being mere spectators, gawking like tourists at Notre Dame. But we should be participants who enter into God's work, renewing the world and seeing the promise of Easter become a reality. So I hope this day that you might find yourself in a different orbit, that these stories of Easter won't be just an idle tale, but that you might find the same determination and drive like Peter did, to get up, to go, to look for yourself, and maybe just be amazed at what God will do. Who knows? That tomb may just be more empty than you think. Amen.